This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Welcome into another edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast, presented by the Boston Herald, Evan Lazar, and Adam Fritton here. And a lot to get to this week, Adam, but let's start with a story that I'm not really sure is a story, or maybe it is a story, and that is that Tom Brady's trainer, Alex Guerrero, the very controversial Alex Guerrero, is no longer welcome on the team plane or on the sideline during games. What's your take on this?
Well, I definitely think it's a story. I don't know how big of an impact it will have, just because it seems like it might have been resolved with how it's been dealt with right now. It just could be something where, you know, just to, you know, how much Brady really loves sort of spreading the gospel, so to speak, of this TB12 stuff, and him not being able to do it right now with the team, in a certain capacity, at least, I feel is sort of a significant type of clash with Belichick. Now, I don't think it's going to be necessarily something that'll keep them from winning on the field. I don't think Brady's going to play any worse. I don't think any of his teammates are going to raise a huge stink. At the end of the day, this is Belichick sort of asserting his control, making sure that there are fewer distractions with his team, and there's more of a singular message coming for a very important aspect of his team, which is the training and strength and conditioning and stuff like that. So as long as that's under control, I don't think it's going to have a huge result. But in terms of a long-term rift, like, this could be something. I just don't know how big yet, because, you know, I don't know all the details in terms of what else is being what else is there other than what's being reported.
Yeah, that's well said. I think that, you know, the main thing is that on the field it's probably not going to have a huge impact. It's more of a long-term thing with Brady and Belichick that maybe you'd have to worry about, you know, what their relationship is like. Obviously, other players are going to want to jump in on this TB12 method. It's keeping the guy at peak physical condition into his 40s. You know, any player, whether they're 23 or 40, is going to want to get in on that and you know, kind of get some of that Brady magic and figure out how he's doing what he's doing and how he's sustained his career for this long. So it's no surprise that it's become a very popular, you know, Alex Guerrero has become a very popular guy in the Patriots facility, you know, with what he's done with Brady. I do think that it's a little bit overblown, and I think it's also not overblown. Like, you know, some people are out on it saying this is the biggest story of the year, and some people are saying, you know, are making light of it. It's probably, the truth is always probably somewhere in the middle of those two.
Right.
You know, and I think that in terms of what it means for Brady 2019 and beyond, if there is a 2019 and beyond for him, is very interesting. You know, that's obviously when his contract expires. And if this is truly the next step in his life, and I think it clearly is this training stuff and the app he just released and the book he just released and, you know, starting his facility in a couple of minutes from the stadium, then, you know, it's very interesting that this is not being, you know, well received by the team. And I think that mainly it is because, hey, they have – notoriously had one of the most well-conditioned teams in the league under Belichick, and yeah. Belichick's probably saying to himself, hey, this, nothing has, you know, changed, and it's worked for 17 years, so what does Alex Guerrero know that I don't, or that the training staff that we have here doesn't, or that those hills in the back of Gillette Stadium can't take care of, you know?
Right.
And that's the thing that people forget, and we talked about this a lot of people did after the Super Bowl when they were able to outlast Atlanta. And that is that, you know, they are a very well-conditioned team in a lot of stories. I think you wrote one about the hills came out, you know, afterwards and the conditioning, you know, strength and conditioning stuff. So, you know, it's kind of hard to really say, well, Brady's doing anything wrong or the team's doing anything wrong, because both methods are working for both parties. And then they're working together, obviously.
Yeah, well, see, my perspective is that I did a story on Moses Cabrera, who's their strength and conditioning coach, and I don't – like, I'm not speculating on given, you know, what Cabrera's relationship is with Guerrero or Brady or any of that stuff. But one of the things that came clear to me through that story is that you want consistent messaging from your staff on this stuff. You don't want division in any respect. So it'd be one thing if everybody on the team were down with this TB12 stuff, but if there's some division and one is telling the other not to do it the way they are, then that's a problem. And you really can't have that, and Belichick doesn't want that. So, you know, the fact that he's sort of drawn a sort of a line here, I think, you know, is basically just sort of the best solution for everybody right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, we'll see what happens in terms of what it means between, you know, the relationship between Belichick and Brady. I think right now it's all pure speculation that this is going to have any impact on that or you know, whatever. So moving on now, the team is on to Buffalo, but this is the first time that we've spoken since one of the best regular season games probably of the Brady Belichick era in Pittsburgh last week. And I just wanted to quickly give our thoughts on that game. And of course, let's start with the last 2 minutes or so and the catch rule and then the fake spike interception and also Brady and Rob Gronkowski on that final drive, Adam. Just balls right there. That's all that is.
Yeah, it's funny. It's well, I was talking about it with Kevin Duffy yesterday of Mass Live. And one thing that he said that stuck out to me is, you know how much – Pittsburgh outplayed the Pats for so much of that game. And, you know, it really does come down to just a key play here or there and making sure, you know, you flip that in your favor and then you can win the game. So, and it always seems to work out in the Pats' favor. Now, you know, that whole last sequence, it's like everybody's been saying. I don't disagree with them going for it there and going for the win. But just be smart about it, you know, like don't throw it into the middle of the field where there's like 11 Patriots and you got one guy running the route. They were so ready for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's even worse, like Belichick was sort of referencing without saying it this way, but like it's so much worse than what happened in the Seattle game because Seattle needed a touchdown. You know, this was with Pittsburgh, incomplete pass, you go into overtime pretty much. So, you know, I put most of it on Roethlisberger, really, because, you know, and just to have a better play ready for something like that, you know, that you just don't go to the middle of the field. It just, like, mathematically doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know? And so, and, you know, Roethlisberger's talking about, oh, well, you know, I want to clock it and all this stuff. No. You just throw it away if it's not there. It was just a bad sort of sequence for the Steelers, like everybody's been saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, to start with, the catch rule is what it is. You know, it got called by the letter of the law. We can argue, and I think everybody's in favor of trying to come up with a better rule.
Yeah.
You know, the rule's bad. Everybody in Patriots Nation can attest to that and can agree with that, I think. But at the same time, you know, the way that the rule is written currently, they called it by the letter of the law. So, you know, it's lucky that that's how it kind of turned out, that Jesse James, you know, did that action instead of just going into the end zone, you know, on his own power or whatever and not falling to the ground. But that, you know, that's kind of what happens, you know, in these games is sometimes teams just get breaks like that. And, you know, it's very lucky. It's a bad rule. But that's just the way it is. But in terms of, you know, the interception, I don't know if you saw the NFL Turning Point last night with Tomlin. And I actually thought that Tomlin was not terrible on the sideline there.
No, he had
it really under control. The only mistake that he really made was he didn't have another play in place already after the second down play that where Malcolm Butler tackles Harwood Bay in bounds. they probably should have had another play already in the holster there, so that they didn't have to call something in. Right. But in terms of that, I mean, he's standing there next to the offensive coordinator, and he's like, you know, get another play ready. We're running another play on third down if he gets tackled in bounds. Are you with me? Are you with me? You know, he's saying the right things, it sounds like. And then Ben, you know, he can say whatever he wants about it post-game or during the week or whatever, but that guy is a 14-year NFL veteran with two Super Bowl rings, should know way better than to make that pass. You know, you throw that pass into the first row and out of the back of the end zone, you kick the field goal, you go to overtime. Did you botch the situation? Absolutely, you still botched the situation, but you didn't lose the game. So for me, I agree with you 100% that you got to look right at Ben Roethlisberger, and I think you put most of the blame on him for that final play and some of the blame for them not having another play already, you know, called for that third down play. But mainly, I mean, you can't make that throw. You just can't. Right. And I think that that's so different, I agree with you, than the Seattle situation, because that was what the play was designed to do in Seattle. And Russell Wilson just kind of threw the pass, through the design. Now, maybe he should have known or seen that the Patriots had it well defensed, but that was just the play call. In this case, this was Ben really having a poor lapse of judgment at probably the worst time possible.
Right, and I agree with you on Tomlin. He was on top of it. Let's run a play right after this. You know, it was one of those things too where, like you said, you know, in that situation, the Patriots have probably something better called, but you don't. I just don't understand that play in that situation. Like, you fake spike, okay, but to the outside or low risk, you know, high reward. You don't, like, you know, I'm totally on board with them going to win the game. You know, you don't want to go to overtime at all with a team like the Pats, because they always seem to find a way to win these close games. But, you know, you had your shot, but, you know, just be a little smarter about it. And Ben really screwed the pooch on that, but agree on the play on the catch. I don't know what a catch is anymore, because look, my thought on it is he made the catch and he already made a football move, and then he crossed the plane and then he dropped it once he hit the ground. So initially, when I saw the play, I thought it was obviously a touchdown.
Oh yeah, so did everybody.
It was funny when the officials came down to Gillette at the beginning of the year. I couldn't find it in my sort of archives, but I remember asking them, it was like, is it clear to you guys what a catch is? And they're like, yeah. So, I mean, I guess they know. They must be the only people that know what a catch is in the world, But again, this is just another example of the Patriots sort of keeping their heads in a very, very high stress environment, and being able to perform well and not lose their cool when other teams do.
Yeah, I wrote about it this week in the Herald, just the contrast between the Patriots' success of winning close games with the ball on offense, you know, Tom Brady leading them on fourth quarter comebacks or game-winning drives or whatever, in contrast to how few the defense has allowed over the last, you know, 17 seasons. And obviously people are going to point directly to the two Super Bowl losses and be like, well, where was the defense those two times, which is fair. But over the course of the, you know, the body of the entire work, this Patriots defense is probably one of the best defenses in the NFL over the last 17 seasons in getting that stop that they got on Sunday, you know, getting a stop exactly like that. So, you know, I mean, there's so many examples of them getting that stop that over, you know, 17 years of success with it, it doesn't become luck anymore. You know, that was kind of the point of my article, was that, you know, how is it luck when, you know, it happens this often? That statistically is the opposite of luck. So, you know, you can argue about the catch rule, can argue about Tomlin and the Steelers' ineptitude, Ben Roethlisberger's, bad decision. But at the end of the day, the Pats just keep doing this. They keep pulling out these games every year, whether, Russell Wilson's giving them an interception or Ben Roethlisberger, it doesn't really matter,
Or the Falcons aren't running the ball.
Or, Donovan McNabb is puking in the huddle or whatever the case may be. It just so often it happens this way. It so often plays out this way. For the Steelers, one other thing, and then I want to talk to you about kind of what things we might feel might linger over to a possible playoff matchup. But, man, they can't be healthy for these games. Whatever it takes, that's one thing that you got to give them. The Killer Bees, Roethlisberger, Le'Veon, and Antonio Brown have each basically missed full games of this series, if you will, over the last couple years. So, Antonio Brown obviously went out early in this game. And that had to have a huge impact, a guy that people are talking about as an MVP candidate right now. So, it is interesting that no matter what, it seems a couple years ago that Patriots got Landry Jones and then Le'Veon didn't really play in the AFC Championship game and now Brown's not really playing in this game. So that is interesting, but, at the same time, injuries are a part of the game. But,
It always seems to be a real big one with them, though.
Yeah.
They are part of the game, but it always seems to be a huge one with them. So, you don't ever want to see that, and you don't ever want to see any injury, obviously. But, these are like big time pieces for the Steelers, and they never seem to be at full strength. Not just when they play the Pats, but like just in general, they have an injury problem. At what point you wonder, that injury there wasn't really fluky or anything like that, but it was just one of those things where, why does this keep happening? But
looking at this now in terms of what it might mean down the road in the playoffs, I got to give the Steelers a lot of credit for most of this game. They really changed up their game plan, especially defensively, from what they did in the AFC Championship game. And I thought, I've been someone that's on Tomlin's case a lot. I think that he's a kind of an overrated head coach in the league. But this game, I actually thought that they really schemed and game planned well against the Pats. Obviously played a lot more man coverage, a lot of cover one. Offensively for the Pats, the difference between Miami and Pittsburgh, and Miami and Pittsburgh played a lot of the same coverages, but the difference was that the Patriots have Rob Gronkowski back, and with him on the field and you play man coverage across the board, he's going to win his matchup, and it's not the same as having without him in Miami, where guys weren't winning their matchups one on one. Gronk absolutely dominated this game and dominated really Sean Davis, the poor Pittsburgh safety that they tasked to cover him one on one a lot in the final few minutes of the game on the game winning drive. So that's really was the difference, was Gronk against Sean Davis. But overall, I thought this game script in general kind of went a really good direction for Pittsburgh, where it was a little bit, in the 20s, a little lower scoring. They had possession for most of the game. They outplayed the Patriots for a lot of the game, as you said. So if this game script were to repeat itself, I don't know if it goes as well for the Pats.
No, it's just funny how the Steelers did everything they really needed to do to put themselves in the position to win this game. And I mean, I think the big thing with me, obviously, and everybody's been talking about this, but really, I mean, they were so good on third down. The Pats were so terrible on third down on offense. They, limited Patriots possessions. Their best defense was their offense staying on the field and keeping the Patriots offense off the field. Those are all the things that you need to do. But, the Patriots do have an ace in the hole in Gronkowski. The guy is, there is no one-on-one matchup that works against him. So, as long as there's somebody else to make a team pay for doubling Gronkowski, then, he's just you know, he's just a sort of uncoverable assignment and sort of this major problem. So, you know, as long as Gronkowski is healthy, I mean, they survived missing him last year with all the guys that were healthy. But a lot of the guys last year that were healthy for the Super Bowl and playoff run aren't healthy this year, you know, including Edelman, obviously. So, you know, this time around, the sort of the lesson I came away from that is, and if they didn't have Gronkowski this game, that's a loss. So it just highlights the importance of Gronkowski's presence on this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think in this game and maybe even in Buffalo, although the defense really held Buffalo's offense down to nothing in that game, but Gronk was pretty much the difference in that third quarter in that game as well. So, you know, that's really the Patriots' ace in the hole, as you said. You know, that's really the difference right now. And on that game-winning drive, when on the first play of the game-winning drive to Gronk, you know, the closest help was 30 yards downfield to cover one safety, and they have Sean Davis in the slot alone on him, and it wasn't even close. I mean, he shakes him off the line, and he's beat him after just two or three steps, you know, off the line of scrimmage, and he's wide open, and Brady, you know, obviously gets him the ball. So I think that, you know, at the end of the day, that's really the conundrum for other teams is like, okay, so, you know, if we dedicate a double team to Gronkowski the entire game and we play man coverage everywhere else, then we're really putting a lot of pressure on our corners to stay in front of guys like Cooks and stuff like that. And stay with or a linebacker, another safety to stay with a running back out of the backfield or something like that. Obviously, in Miami, you know, there is no double team necessary to go anywhere, so they can roll that safety over to Cook's side of the field, and they can drop another body into the middle of the field to take away that, you know, the middle of the field passing game. With Gronk out there, you know, when a double goes to him, it just leaves, you know, really good matchups in the rest of for the rest of the team. So that's really, you know, you can live with that, I guess, if you're the opposing team and you just say, okay, you know, if Brandon Cooks has a monster game on us in single coverage on the outside and we lose, then, you know, at least we didn't get beat by Gronk. But that's really the, you know, that's really the conundrum for them. But, you know, I think that at the end of the day, that's that tight man coverage has worked more times than it hasn't, or more times than another strategy has. So I would assume that we see that against the Patriots probably the rest of the way here, especially into the playoffs when you face some of these teams that are might have the weapons on defense to match up like that, like a Jacksonville or even you know, a Baltimore potentially, or something like that.
Yeah, I agree that those teams in particular are have some of the personnel that can pull that off.
Yeah, so on defense, you know, the main thing, takeaway, two things that I took away from this one is, first of all, I don't think that this wide receiver matchup, not that it's good for anybody, I don't think it's good at all for the Patriots corners. This is a tough matchup for them. You know, obviously Antonio Brown's Antonio Brown, but actually Malcolm Butler is probably the one that fits into the matchup the best, you know, covering AB, believe it or not. But the rest of the matchups, you know, basically they put Gilmore on an island with Martavis Bryant, who is as fast and explosive as you can get. And, you know, it wasn't that it was an awful day for Gilmore, but definitely wasn't a good day. And a lot of it was, you know, they had to have kind of known some of those lumps were coming, putting him by himself against a guy like Martavis. You know, you don't put safety help over the top against him. Martavis is bound to catch one or two balls. It's just going to happen. And then in the slot, they went with Eric Rowe. I would be interested to see if they go with Jonathan Jones next time around, since Rowe really did not have very much success against Juju. But that's a tough matchup too, because Juju is just a rare slot receiver where he's got a lot of quickness and speed, but he's also big. So.
Yeah, I was watching that game and just thinking, look, there's no single matchup here where the Patriots have the advantage when it comes to corners against receivers. This is, I mean, look, you look at that core of guys in terms of their speed and their ability to get open, you just want to contain it. You know, I know it's the old cliche, but those are guys that are going to get open against man coverage. there is no sort of magic potion that the Patriots can do when it comes to covering these guys one-on-one and stopping them. I think, you know, the best you can hope for is maybe mixing coverages or making just making sure that these guys don't get behind everybody. But in terms of, you know, just, you know, down to down separation, it was no contest in my opinion. You know, it's just these Steelers receivers are just winning those matchups. So, but you know, what the Patriots did, which was good, is, you know, a lot of times, you know, their open field tackling was okay. You know, obviously not in this Smith-Schuster run towards the end, but that's really what it comes down to in my eyes, is when you play a team like this with a receiving core this good, you just have to limit the big plays and do your best to sort of keep them in front of you, because you're not gonna shut those guys down at all. Like, they're just too good.
yeah, they really know how to draft receivers in Pittsburgh, and they have a lot of really good ones. You know, even guys like an Eli Rogers, who caught a touchdown in this game, who isn't, you know, necessarily thought of as that highly, is still a very, very good route runner, and you know, can win in those types of situations like he did on Sunday. I just think that it's an interesting wrinkle that it's really not a great matchup anywhere across the board against this Pittsburgh team, and I think that they have a stark advantage in that respect, similarly to how the Patriots have, you know, the advantage with Gronk on the offensive side of the ball. And finally, I wanted to ask you this. Jordan Richards had himself an okay game until he tackled Devin McCourty off of Juju Smith on that last big completion. But could Jordan Richards be the answer to their pass-catching running back problem? Because he covered Le'Veon out of the backfield a handful of times and did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I think at this point you really just want to see anybody sort of take on that task, because it's very tough. With, like, the guy that you really want to see just isn't available in Van Noy. You know, maybe he comes back this week. You know, you don't want to rush anybody back who's that important. But, you know, Van Noy is the guy, I think, who is their, you know, obviously their best coverage linebacker. Is Richards going to be the guy going forward? I don't know. But, you know, he is, you know, one of those guys that sort of fits the profile in terms of, you know, not being the type of guy that's going to cover a slot receiver or something, like one of those real quick guys. And he's not necessarily, you know, the type of linebacker that is going to be holding up very well against, you know, offensive linemen. But in terms of covering running backs, I mean, that's probably his best attribute in terms of this defense. So just really all this, these last few games has just sort of highlighted to me just how important Kyle Van Noy is. And I know there's a lot of sort of national, you know, publications or websites or whatever that don't think that Van Noy is very good, but he's just so important to this defense. You know, they really need him in a number of different roles. So, you know, whatever. I'm not sure how, you know, I know there's a bunch of different metrics to measure individual players, but, you know, when you get a guy like Van Noy off the field, it really highlights some of the depth issues they can have, because he's a terrific, he's got like all these different tools that work in that defense, then it's important to have them out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're making a list, we did this a couple months ago, the most important Patriots. If you're making a list of the most important Patriots players on defense, then Kyle Van Noy is one of the two or three first names out of your mouth. It has to be, you know, I think at this point with the way that the linebackers are just so depleted, and just, you know, the makeup of the entire defense is really – predicated on him being a consistent player in that spot. You know, it's not necessarily that he needs to be, you know, Luke Kuechly or anything like that. He just needs to be consistent, which is what he really is. And, you know, like you said, the places like Pro Football Focus, for example, or something like that, do not grade him out very highly. He's had a low grade in their system all season. But the main thing is that he doesn't, have glaring mess ups, and he's always in a positionally sound, and he's always doing the job that they're asking him to do, whether it's playing out on the edge or playing as a stand up linebacker. It doesn't really make a difference in terms of consistency. So yeah, maybe he's not, an all pro linebacker or a pro bowler or anything like that. But he's wildly consistent compared to the other guys that they have, guys like Olanen Roberts or David Harris or what have you. Those guys are all, up and down players all season, Olanen Roberts especially, and, had some really great moments and some really, really bad moments. Kyle Van Noy, you don't really see that too often. You kind of see him even keeled for most of the time. And that's super valuable for a front seven right now that really has a lack of talent, I would say.
Yeah, to me, it's more, one of these things where when Van Noy's out there, the multiple things he can do can allow other guys to be comfortable in their roles. So it's just a matter of his versatility, allowing Patricia to do things that keeps guys comfortable in their spots.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do think Jordan Richards kind of found something a little bit there of kind of a niche. He's not going to play a lot. And I know a lot of Patriots fans are like, why is this guy even on the team still? And that's all fair. But I think that the two things that we saw out of this game is one thing, he's a special teams contributor, which I know everybody hates to hear. It's kind of the thing, that is almost overrated at this point, but not quite. And mainly, I think that this role of him as kind of the third or fourth safety in the game, that's kind of covering those like middle zones and stuff like that, like a linebacker probably normally would. He's a lot more athletic than any of the guys, even though he's not super athletic for a defensive back. He's a lot more athletic than the guys that they would have in that spot, like an Olanen Roberts or David Harris or something like that. So maybe in obvious passing situations and when they get up in a game, stuff like that, I do think that there's a spot for him in that role. So let's move on to Buffalo. Obviously, I'm not so sure how exactly you hype up this game, but the Bills are somehow still kind of in it. It's one of those games where there's a lot to talk about, I feel like, because first of all, you have all the Gronkowski, playing against Tre'Davious White and playing against this team again stuff, and kind of that sour taste that might still be in Buffalo's mouth. But at the same time, the Patriots have absolutely dominated this matchup, incredibly dominated this matchup since Brady took over. But looking back at that last game, that whole entire game changed when Eric Lee had that interception on that first drive of the game. Right. And we can play the what-if game, with a lot of different things, but if Buffalo punches it in there and scores a touchdown, the entire game changes. The entire complexion of the game changes, and I think that game would have been a lot closer if that had been the case.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots didn't really run away and hide from the Bills in that game until later. But I feel like the Bills are one of these teams where I like a lot of what they're doing, but they're not quite there yet. So, I feel like, they're about where they exceeded my expectations of where I thought they'd be at this point. I thought they had much less of a shot at even being this close to making the playoffs. I thought they were in one of those rebuild stages, but I think they've done a nice job of drafting good players this year. I thought, obviously White's been outstanding. Zay Jones has been a pretty good find at receiver. They have a direction where you could say, okay, maybe in a year or two, they are, a more serious contender in the AFC East. But I just think that right now, this is not a game the Patriots are going to lose. Like, realistically, I just feel like, the Patriots have a little bit too much going for them, and they're playing well. Had Buffalo. It would be nice to see Buffalo just give their fans a playoff berth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
It's just, that's too long for any fan base.
1999, the last time.
That's crazy. So, but I just don't, I don't see it. I think the Bills can play them tough. I just don't see the type of offensive weaponry right now where they can do what the Steelers did. I think their defense has some nice young pieces and is headed in the right direction. I just don't think they have enough talent at this point. You know, they're still restocking things, and they're not quite where they need to be.
Yeah, I think defensively, you know, they have a lot of really skilled coverage players in the back end. In the secondary is a very good secondary. You know, Trey White was a great pick, obviously. Micah Hyde was a great free agent signing who has been outstanding for them. Poyer, EJ Gaines, these are guys that are playing a lot of snaps for them, and they're playing at a very high level. So in terms of coverage, they're a very good coverage team, which I think is what's kept them afloat this season, has really been the fact that they can shut down opposing passing attacks to a degree. You're 100% right. They're still building. I think that they still need a lot of player talent and players in the front seven to kind of, you know, combine with that secondary that they've had built now. That is basically going to be around for a while because Hyde and Trey White obviously is only a rookie. Hyde is under contract for a while, and Trey White, you know, obviously under contract too. So those are two big, you know, kind of pieces of this defense going forward in terms of longevity. But, you know, they really shut down Miami last week, and Jay Cutler was a turnover machine. And, you know, in one respect, it's like, you know, maybe Miami got up for the Patriots game as kind of their Super Bowl, their big moment to shine where they weren't going to make the playoffs and all that stuff. But, you know, you can't really say, you know, that the Bills didn't play a good team or good offense when a week ago Miami was, you know, putting up a ton of points on the Patriots. So, you know, it was a really good defensive effort by Buffalo, and they turned over Jay Cutler three times, and he fumbled four more times, somehow didn't lose any of them, but he could have had seven turnovers in this game, which is just crazy.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's something to look at. It's a well-organized unit. McDermott definitely knows how to coach defense. He's brought a lot of the same coverages, the cover ones, the cover twos that he brought from Carolina that really have, you know, won them a lot of games, and Carolina almost won them a Super Bowl. So in terms of defense, they really know what they're doing. And that's kind of why I think that game a couple weeks ago was 23-3, you know, only 23 points for the Pats, yeah. And really only one quarter of good offensive football for them, because it is a good defense that knows what it's doing. Offensively, I've been kind of like a Tyrod truther for a while now, but I'm kind of like not sure I'm still in on it, honestly, yeah. After watching him the last couple weeks on tape. You know, there's one thing that a lot of people have always said about Tyrod that I agree with, but at the same time, I wonder what he could do if the offense was shaped better for him and if he had better receivers.
Right.
But the main thing is that he doesn't throw the ball downfield.
Right.
He just doesn't want to sometimes. And he'll look at it and he'll just pull it down every single time, and he'd rather run or drop it off to Shady McCoy or something like that. Any, you know, like the Mason Dixon line for yards per attempt is 7. He's at 6.5 this season, and he's been below 7 pretty much his entire career as a starter. And and when you look at that, I mean, it's not the end all be all, obviously, but all of the stats back it up in terms of his downfield passing, whether you want to look at next gen or YPA or whatever you want to look at. All that stuff will tell you that Tyrod is a dink-and-dunk quarterback and doesn't throw the ball downfield and doesn't push it aggressively downfield either. Now, when he had Sammy Watkins, it was a little different. You know, he would throw the ball more downfield, but really only to Sammy. The question is, I don't know if Tyrod, and I don't think the Bills think Tyrod is their future quarterback at all, but I doubt that Tyrod's in Buffalo next year a lot at this point.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny how, you know, I don't think they think he's their future, but I still think he's by far their best quarterback, you know? So
No, him getting benched for Nathan Peterman is still one of the worst things that's happened this season. That's for sure.
But in terms of what your scouting report on him, I totally agree. It's just like he's got that Alex Smith sort of gene in him where he's, you know, he'd rather just play it safe, and it helps his, you know, completion percentage and, you know, their ability to sort of, you know, march their way down the field. But he's not somebody who's overly aggressive and takes a chance. You know, maybe that's playing within himself and knowing what he can do and what he can't. But it's also one of these deals where you feel limited with the Bills sometimes in terms of when they get behind. You know, you don't feel like they're just going to put the ball in Tyrod's hands. He's going to just chuck it all over the field and get you back in the game.
Absolutely.
So, you know,
their only way to win a game, game script wise, is to be ahead. You know, they have to win the game like they won against Miami last week, where they get out to a nice 21-6 halftime lead or something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and I also think that where can they score points? It's likely them being a bully and handing it to Shady McCoy 35 times in this game. And that's like what I don't understand is what, especially when they play a team like the Patriots, I would just run read option all day. I would run read option with Tyrod and Shady McCoy in the backfield 100 times because you're going to get the ball out on the edge with those two guys a handful of times if you do that. And the Patriots got no answer to that. This Bills team, I think, is built to be a bully, and they're kind of trying to be a little bit more of a 50-50 type offense. But their offensive line is built to be a run-blocking offensive line. It's not as good as it's been in the past, but it's still pretty good in that regard, especially. And they have one of the best running backs in the game, who I would say he's probably 6 or 7 on my list, the top running backs. But Shady definitely is in the conversation for a top 5. Yeah. And you know, so in that respect, they could win this game if they decided to run the ball 40 times and really control the clock and control the pace and play from ahead and do all those things. I just don't know if their coaching staff and if they're going to be willing to do it. That's really going to be the question.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I mean, coming into the season, when I looked at that team, I was like, well, you know, they don't have the receivers, and that, you know, it seems like that aspect of their passing game is going to hold them back to a certain extent, but you know, they got the run blocking offensive line, and they got the stud back, and they got a quarterback that can move the ball with his feet too. So, you know, but they didn't really build their offense that way, like you said. So, you know, it feels like they're a transitional sort of offense. They want to do something that's not necessarily best for the personnel of their guys. So, you know, but yeah, if they follow that script, that one thing where they get ahead and can lean on their running game, it can be effective. I mean, that's like a lot of these teams this year are running the ball very well against the Pats, but the Pats will find ways to get ahead and make teams sort of abandon it. So
yeah, getting out to a lead is, and the stats back it up, it's one of the most underrated things about these football games is how these game scripts go. You know, and playing with a lead and getting a lead early in the first half, and you know, you can really get a lead like Buffalo did last week against Miami, and then kind of coast in the second half to a victory if you do it correctly. And the third and fourth quarter has almost become, you know, null and void. So I think that's one of the most underrated parts of football is how important getting out to a fast start is in all these games. And I think the Patriots are a team that have always kind of, you know, emphasized that in terms of getting out to a fast start, you know. And I don't know. I think that this Buffalo game is probably another win for the Pats. But at the same time, you know, these divisional games never seem to be as easy as we want them to be. So you never know. But the strategy for the Patriots the last 2 weeks here, Adam, do you see them playing as aggressively as ever, or do you kind of see them try to protect some guys here down the stretch?
Well, I think they have to be smart about it. But I think the way you go down these stretches of the season when it's, you know, right, ramping up to the playoffs, you want to be playing your best football, and you want you don't want to take your foot off the gas. So, I feel like they're in a good spot to clinch home field advantage, but I don't think it would be smart, even when they do that, to sort of ease off. Unless you're talking about somebody like Gronkowski, like he's somebody you want to protect as much as possible. I mean, we've seen and talked about just how important he is to this year's offense as opposed to past years. He's just too important.
He's always kind of had different rules.
Yeah, exactly. So when it comes to that, just, you know, it's a balance that you want to stay as competitive as possible and as aggressive as possible without guys getting injured, because they've had so many injuries this year. And, you know, you want to be healthy and all that going into the playoffs, but you don't want to take your foot off the gas. So I think they should be aggressive, and I think they have been as smart as they can be with these injuries. So, you know, if you're playing to protect guys towards the end of the season, it's, you know, there's only so much you can do. At the end of the day, these are football games. There's danger out there. So, you know, I think they should keep their foot on the gas and stay aggressive.
Yeah, I think the best, you know, thing to point to there is the 2015 season, where they really stumbled down the stretch and Edelman went out with an injury, and they kind of, you know, played it safe down the stretch and played the four corners offense in a couple of those last games, and they stumbled in the playoffs, and they were never really the same team after that. So aggressiveness is good, I think, but at the same time, guys like a Gronkowski certainly have different roles. And if the week 17 game against Miami ends up being a meaningless game, which I don't think it will be, because there's a lot of things that would have to happen for the Patriots to clinch a first round with a home field advantage throughout this week. They need a Jacksonville and a Pittsburgh loss, I believe, both of those things, and a win over Buffalo to happen. So not likely. You know, if it is a Week 17 game that's meaningless, then maybe they shut down a bunch of the vets. But we'll see what happens. So what do you have going on this week?
Well, it's a little bit of an examination of how the Patriots are always sort of prepared for these crazy situations at the end of games, and how they don't really panic, and how it's sort of a result of just, you know, prepping their players relentlessly on anything that can come up. And that's sort of a very difficult, it's much more difficult to actually do than say, because, you know, you have a certain amount of time that you get to work with these players. I mean, obviously a lot, but, you know, how much of your time as a coaching staff are you going to budget for certain things like a fake spike and this and that? So just looking at that and talking to players about that.
I think, yeah, that's great. I think that how Belichick figures out that time is amazing, you know, because it seems like they're prepared for every single little situation to happen. And when you really break it down, there's not that many hours of practice time available to them. So it's amazing that he's able to time manage it in that respect to get, you know, them all prepared for all these situations. For me, I kind of along those same lines. I looked at this week about the game-winning drives, both for the Patriots and against the Patriots. It's quite a stark separation there. Brady has 52 game-winning drives in his career. This was his 52nd on Sunday with Gronk, and the opposing team has 18 in that span, and that's the fewest in the NFL by a wide margin. So although the Patriots haven't really they have a less opportunities in terms of the defense having to get that stop, because they have a lot of two-score leads late in some of these games. In terms of statistically, they are one of the best teams of closing out the game on defense just as much as they are on offense. So I think that that's something that gets super underrated. And when we get talking about, you know, is it luck that they get it, you know, stumble into these situations, they more times than not, not only do they, you know, stop the other team, but they turn them over like they did in this last game. That was their 23rd takeaway in the final 2 minutes of a one score game since 2001. So it's pretty incredible. And Daron Harmon has 6 interceptions in that situation, including the one, you know, that he had on Sunday. So the stats are pretty crazy. And I love the stats of the Pats, because if I did this type of stuff with another team, I don't know what numbers I would pull, because with this team, it's like there's so many different directions I can go with it because they're so good in so many different scenarios that it's really a lot of fun to pick out all the things that they have just done at a crazy high level over the last 17 seasons. But that's all the time we have for this week. And the Patriots will remain in Foxborough finally for the rest of the schedule here against Buffalo in week 16, and then a revenge game against the Miami Dolphins in week 17, see if they can revenge that loss from a few weeks ago. But we'll be here to break it all down, and we will continue with the Patriots as far as they go into the playoffs as well, hopefully to another Super Bowl. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchen, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is H to the OV. I used to move snowflakes by the OC. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the ROC. Fresh out the frying pan.